This is Pamela Banos, and I'm speaking with Julia Bachrach, who is the Chicago Park District's historian, and we're sitting in her archive that she has created in the Park District office. Thank you for agreeing to meet with me, Julia, today, and to allow me to record this interview that I will be publishing on my website.
Thanks, Pamela.
So can you tell me, in however much time you would like, how you came to have the role of the historian at the Park District? And I know you've been at the Park District for quite a while now, and you're not even that old, so you must have been very young to have started.
I always say they hired me when I was 12. Ed Euler, who's now the consulting architect for Millennium Park, he was the architect at the Chicago Park District. He was in charge of the engineering department here, and there were a lot of changes that happened within the structure of the Chicago Park District in the mid-1980s, and so he had risen to the head of engineering, and at that time, Walter Netsch, who was an important architect in Chicago, was the president of the Chicago Park District Board, and he and Ed had kind of envisioned sort of some new staffing at the Park District, and Ed was always concerned with the historic resources at the Park District and had decided that he was going to create a whole team that would include an archivist and a historian. And so at that time, he hired me to kind of head up this group. It was a very exciting time because he had discovered a vault underneath Soldier Field, and it was filled with archival materials, a lot of original plans.
What do you mean when you say he discovered this?
Well, Ed had worked for the Park District for many years, and I think he really knew that this vault existed. It was a sub-basement vault underneath Soldier Field. Our administrative offices were connected to Soldier Field, and there was some underground parking. And so if you went down several layers underneath the building, there was a little parking lot, and there was a vault. And Ed had the, I think somebody had given him the combination to this vault.
Like a bank vault?
Like a room? Yeah, I would imagine that a bank vault might look kind of like this, although I don't think
so
there were any
safe,
humidity controls or anything.
Safekeeping place.
Right.
I mean,
it was probably part of the original construction of that building, which was built in the late 1930s. And so he unearthed a lot of these materials. There was a big Chicago Tribune Sunday newspaper, the Sunday magazine section, reported in 1987 the discovery and the unearthing of these materials. And that was really what made him think about trying to hire some staff people who would be equipped at dealing with these kinds of materials. When I was hired in 1988, it was not just to develop an archive, but it was really to create a whole mission of historic preservation for the Chicago Park District. And my master's degree was through a historic preservation program in landscape architecture from the University of Wisconsin, and I had spent the previous 4 years as the preservation coordinator for the city of Highland Park, and they have a lot of important landscape resources there. So it was a really exciting time at the Park District. There were a lot of, a number of staff people that were here that all, you know, together we sort of had this mission of beginning to preserve these wonderful historic resources in addition to trying to take care of these valuable archival collections.
So you went and you went through these materials, and your offices at that time were still in Soldier Field.
Right, and even before I had started, Ed hired a colleague of mine who was then finishing his master's at Columbia University, Will Tippins, he was completing a thesis that actually dealt with some of the materials. He was talking about the work of the Olmsted brothers in the South Park District, and they created these very innovative neighborhood parks that became kind of the model throughout the nation and had a huge influence on the way parks were programmed and designed throughout America. And so he had already been cataloging a lot of the materials before I started. And then there was a grant that came through that was a federal grant but administered through the State Historic Preservation Office, and the Chicago Landmarks Commission applied for it jointly with the Chicago Park District, and that initially created my position. And so the first year that I was here in 1988, the team included myself, Will Tippins, who is an architectural historian, and an archivist. And so the three of us kind of set out to try to figure out what to do with all this material and just sort of how to begin this process, because the Park District just has such an unbelievable collection of historic resources in terms of gardens and landscapes and sculptures and architecture. So we did a major survey, and we began a program of designating parks on the National Register of Historic Places, which is something that I continue to do today.
So that's 20 years ago now.
Almost 20 years ago. Well, it will be 20 years this year, right?
This year.
Exactly.
And so you've been, since that time, like gathering this information and putting it together. And we're sitting, as I said, in this room that has your cabinets and it's got all these archival boxes and everything is cataloged. And I know you don't have a lot of help all the time to help you do this. And so, you know, it looks like a heroic
well,
effort.
Now I mostly work with graduate students, but I mean, luckily, a lot of the heavy lifting was done 20 years ago, and so for the most part, I mean, this archive can be used only by appointment only, because unfortunately I don't have any staffing for people to drop in, so it's not set up, you know, as some research libraries might be. But I, for the most part, when people have an inquiry, I'm usually able to help them. If it's something that's where there's a lot of redundant material, I may ask them to go to the Chicago History Museum. If it's something like some of our annual reports, for instance, this is not the only place that you need to come. Mm-hmm. But if people have an inquiry, or I help a lot of history students. There's a Chicago History Fair, you know, a lot of graduate students. They basically just have to contact me by phone or by email and then make an appointment. And I do my best to help them. And I do have some graduate students here. Sometimes they are able to help me with those kinds of projects as well.
So that's how I ended up here, obviously, for my project, because you had materials that I had no idea that they existed. And when I arrived here, I remember we went back and forth, because I didn't arrive here because you were working on your wonderful book that just came out right like the week that I first arrived here in December.
Well, and I think the way that you'd framed your question, I didn't initially think I was going to be able to help you very much, because most of my records date to from 1860 right. on, I'm sorry, they date from 1869 when the Lincoln Park Commission was formed on, right. You know, and so, I can't remember exactly how you framed it, but I had thought you were looking for materials that were earlier,
right.
And so that's part of the trick with research. I think
right.
It's a lot like restoring an old house that you don't really know what you're looking for until you start uncovering those
things.
Layers. So had you said, right. Do you have material relating to the beginnings of the Lincoln Park Commission? I would have said, oh, I have a lot of things.
But I didn't know the Lincoln Park Commission would have the materials that
right.
I was looking
exactly.
for. So, I mean, I remember that day that I arrived here and you showed me the first book, which is the original first minutes recorded in the hand of the time in 1869. And we spent the first hour of me going, oh, my God, and you going, I'm sorry.
I felt terrible, because I thought you really could have arrived here several months earlier.
But so I spent several long days in here reading and absorbing all of this information that I was amazed that you had here in such an organized way.
Well, and you were lucky, too, because what you were looking for had an index. And so, you know, there were originally three original park commissions, the South, the West, and the Lincoln Park Commission. And for the South and for Lincoln, we have full indexes on everything. And for the West Park Commission, the indexes, many of them were lost, and I'm still trying to find them. And I believe that I'll find them someday, that they may be in a warehouse. But so far, I haven't tracked them down. And so it's really challenging if you were asking. I've had people for specific dates of the West Park Commission, I end up coming up dry, and I feel so badly because I know that those documents are here somewhere, but not in this room,
right, right.
Somewhere within the context of the Chicago parks. So at least that was one good thing.
Yeah. Well, it was amazing. That day, my head almost exploded by the end of the day. I needed to just go home.
Yeah, it can be very exciting when you're looking for a long time for archival materials.
Or you think you've seen everything there is to see, and all of a sudden this whole trove of new information, which filled in so many holes in what I was doing, because it became not part of the public record anymore, like the Common Council files that I was looking at, which essentially end in 1871. And your system picks up like in 1869, so there's this two-year overlap that I did have some overlapping materials for, but all of a sudden you picked up the story right where it left off.
Well, and another thing that was interesting about you coming in a little bit farther along into your research is that sometimes when people come here as their first stop, I get the sense that mm-hmm. they aren't really making the full use of the materials. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you already knew so much about your subject made the materials mm-hmm. even more meaningful
mm-hmm.
to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I read every page of those minutes. So let's talk about Lincoln Park in its early incarnation. So we have in front of us two sources, the original plan of Lincoln Park, which covers the grounds from what looks like Menominee Street up to today's Webster. And we were talking before I started recording about the land, the state that the land was in its virgin state, and in the part between Menominee and Wisconsin Street, which had been part of the used cemetery. So there were already like holes that were dug twice, once to inter a body and once to get the body out during the Milliman Tract episode. And so the challenges that went into landscaping this, and so your background being in landscape architecture and the history of that.
Well, I'm really fascinated by public parks and the fact that, I mean, this is a particularly challenging project, or it was a particularly challenging project for the designers and the builders, because the site had so many strange things about it. But the fact that these designers would have to take raw land, or in this case, you know, some of it was buried cemetery and others, you know, cemetery in various states, and there were many other challenges to the site, including just the fact that it was on the edge of the lakefront in Chicago, and transform that into usable grounds. And the amount of work and thought and engineering and planning and planting that went into these parks, you know, to me, I think they are living works of art. And many of them are so old now, and we're so used to them, and I think people love Chicago's parks, but it's still hard to remember the fact that these really are human-made creations and that they didn't just pop up this way. So I think it's just really fascinating. And you think about the types of labor, you know, the way in which everything had to be done with, you know, horse-drawn equipment and wagons, and the amount of work that went into actually creating these places. So I think it's really fascinating. And, you know, when you think about the original site, and it had these sort of lower areas that were very wet, and then some higher areas that were ridges, and the person who created the original plan was Swain Nelson. He was a Swedish landscape gardener. And then his cousin came over from Sweden and joined him, and they worked together. And his name was Olaf Benson, and he actually had a little house in the park for a while because he was the superintendent of the park. And so in several iterations of the plans, as the park began to grow, it was Nelson and Benson who were envisioning the improvements. Of course, the Lincoln Park commissioners had to be pleased. I mean, they were in charge of the decision making, but these were not only the designers but the builders of the park, and they had so many different issues to contend with that in fact at one point they were paid extra, I think something like $12 extra a year, to shoo cows off of the construction site. So, you know, you start just thinking about what went into creating this place. It's really pretty amazing that that we still have it, and today it's a 1200 acre park that, you know, is just immensely important to the city of Chicago.
So the original plan shows the original, or the natural lakeshore line, which, from the way I understand these maps, it looks like the lagoon was the edge of the lake, and then they built around that, which created this.
Right. Well, this is the South Lagoon. So the Rowing Lagoon was part of an addition that was done in 1887, and so that was the first landfill addition to the park that extended east into what was then Lake Michigan. The reason for this addition in 1887 was that they were having such terrible problems with lakeshore erosion. And so they felt that if they were going to spend all of this money building lakeshore protection devices, that they might as well spend just a little extra money and do some backfill. Of course, by that time, Grant Park had already had its first landfill extension when they dumped debris and rubble from the Chicago fire. So the precedent had already been set. But it really is pretty remarkable in Chicago that we have thousands of acres of parkland that's made out of landfill. So the old lake, the old edge of the lake, there was kind of a lakeshore drive.
And the inside of the lagoon.
Yeah, this was the old Lakeshore Drive. Now, part of that is the parking lot for the zoo. So part of that is now considered Cannon Drive. But the if you look at this original plan, it's really quite interesting. It's what they had a water feature that they called the Serpentine Lagoon, and you can see it has three major components and has these very irregular kinds of edges to it.
Is that following the structure of the land, do you think? And I know they were building mounds and then...
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that there were these swills sort of led itself to the idea of the water, but the fact that it has such an undulating edge was probably just part of their design idea. And then there's this very tight network of winding paths. And the road that you see on the edge up here is called Ridge Connecting Drive. So you can see there's still a little remnant of that. You can actually walk up there today if you're standing on the Grant Monument.
By the Grant Monument. Mm-hmm.
You're kind of on the top. And then that really gives you a sense of the topography and the fact that there were these much higher areas and lower areas in Lincoln Park. And then you can look out to that parking lot and imagine that was the old Lakeshore Drive.
Mm-hmm. And something that I didn't realize until I started reading the materials is that the original Lakeshore Drive, well, I guess what we now know as Lakeshore Drive, which was built on the other side of the lagoon at the lake's edge.
Yeah, what they called the Outer Drive when they built it.
The Outer Drive, which is still sometimes referred to as the Outer Drive. That's funny.
Right, yeah.
But see, there is still an inner drive around Diversey.
Right. But in this plan, you do see, a paved beach and you see the Outer Drive. We're looking at a plan of 1899 here.
But that I didn't realize that Lakeshore Drive was part of Lincoln Park.
Oh, that's funny. I wonder if a lot of people wonder about that.
I mean, that's just seems like something you just know. But
yeah, I thought everybody
I never. Well, I'm assuming if I didn't know, that other people didn't know, and that the first incarnation of Lincoln Park of Lakeshore Drive went from North Avenue to connect to Pine Street, which is now Michigan Avenue, which became Michigan Avenue, and that became part of
the system
of the park system.
Right. The idea was, and this is something that always surprises me, that people don't realize that the historic boulevard system in Chicago,
I didn't know that either.
Still exists, is really probably the first park and boulevard system as a cohesive system in America. And so the idea was that Lincoln Park would be linked to downtown through Lakeshore Drive, and then Diversey was supposed to be a wide boulevard. It never was improved that way, but it was meant to be, that would then connect to the West Parks. And then there's a whole network of these beautiful landscaped, huge kind of swaths of green space that then connected the West Parks, which were Humboldt, Garfield, and Douglas Parks, to the South Park District, which is now called Jackson Park, Washington Park, and the Midway Plaisance. And then you would take Michigan Boulevard and come back downtown. So the idea was a whole circle.
And the boulevards were made to connect to the different parks.
Right. It was a complete experience.
Yeah. There's signage out there now that explains that in different places, which was very helpful.
Yeah, a few years back, the Chicago Landmarks Commission did this sort of identity campaign for the boulevards. And so you can ride, there's a biking the boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
There's some event every year. So you can actually, because then you're riding your bike at roughly about probably the same speed that they were used for, for the horse and carriage. So Lincoln Park was, in 1869, and that's, again, when most of our materials sort of begin with the creation of the Lincoln Park Commission. And as you know, that the park itself already existed at that point, and it was a city park. The Bureau of Public Works was in charge of it. But there were a lot of people that felt that it needed to be created into a much more sort of ambitious and beautiful park. And just the whole effort at that point to get rid of the surrounding cemetery land and make it all into parkland. And so in 1869, when the Lincoln Park Commission was formed, it was, pretty much around the same time as the other two park commissions. They were empowered by the state of Illinois. So the South, the West, and the Lincoln Park Commission all came into existence just within a few weeks of each other in 1869. With the idea that this would create a substantial park system for Chicago. So even though they were three separate bodies, the people that were sort of behind these efforts were talking to each other and really trying to create a cohesive system of parks and boulevards for the city.
And so part of the problem with the disinterments that were happening after Lincoln Park assumed control of the grounds, or I don't know what the proper language of that would be, that the park commissioners were then given the land
authority.
And then given the authority and then expected to assume the responsibility for the rest of the exhumations or whatever was to happen next. And at that time, my understanding is that the first map that we're looking at that we've just talked about was called the cemetery. It was very briefly. It was called Cemetery Park, and that's how it's labeled on.
Yeah, I think that was more of a nickname. There was the official name of Lake Park.
And then it became Lake Park, and then it became Lincoln Park. After 4 months after, they just decided one meeting.
But when you look at that plan, it's already Lincoln Park because part of the
by Swain and Nelson's.
Yeah, well, no, Swain Nelson, that's one man.
Swain Nelson.
Right, and then his cousin is Olaf Benson, but his cousin Benson wasn't involved yet in 1865. And Swain Nelson also was kind of an interesting figure because he assisted in the creation of Graceland Cemetery. And so he worked with William Saunders, who was a nationally important landscape designer. And then he started his own nursery. So he was able to actually, you know, had the materials, the plant materials, to then create these places. And at one point, the famous landscape designer, Jens Jensen, when he was just a laborer and looking for, you know, work, he was like a day laborer, he actually worked for Swain Nelson. And so so there's a lot of connection between all of these.
And this is what makes the history confusing and complex and interesting and sort of a lost story at times, is that this is simultaneous to the rural cemetery movement, where they were, you know, there's the issues that have to do with that, the sanitary issues that have to do with the cemetery on the lake and this sandy, marshy burial ground.
I think the rural cemetery movement really does play in,
yeah,
to
and the
Lincoln
park movement. Exactly. But so I've loved this irony of Nelson building the cemetery at the same time, or, you know, designing the cemetery grounds in Graceland at the same time he's designing Lincoln Park grounds, or if not simultaneously, that he had his hand in both of them.
Right.
And this kind of
idea.
Well,
the other connection is the Lathrop family, Brian Lathrop, who his family founded Graceland Cemetery, and he was very knowledgeable about, you know, the whole history of landscape design. He had looked at a lot of the great landscapes of Europe, and was at one point, I think, the vice president of Graceland Cemetery, later becomes the president of Lincoln Park Commission Board. So there's a lot of connection between the two.
Yeah. But in terms of the perspective and the focus that I've taken on this, I love the idea that they wanted the park to be a cemetery and the cemetery to be a park. And
yeah, that's a great point.
The grounds here, which were burial grounds, we want to make a park. We want to make the burial grounds over there look like a park.
Right. And there's that's just, right. That's there's a great point. I love it.
So that part is just
fascinating.
It's a whole other thing. And so, but the point I wanted to make about that it's however long it was called cemetery and park, even before probably it was designed. It was still a cemetery from that point down, and they were calling it the Old Cemetery. And it seemed like, mm-hmm. from what I was gathering, or the information that I have found, that it was going to stay a cemetery.
Well, it seemed like there was a movement.
There was, and there was all. But
they were having trouble actually getting sort of the follow through. So they would prohibit any further burials.
Right.
But then they would just keep burying.
Right.
So the
right.
But the idea, I mean, the people on the north side were petitioning to make this a park.
But also the people who had cemetery lots were lobbying to keep the cemetery. So there was this ongoing struggle. And what I think that happened between 1869 and 1871 was these kinds of arguments that were going on. And then of course in October 1871 the Great Chicago Fire blew through. And it essentially ravaged the landscape. It was the northern edge of where the fire grounds were. Mm-hmm. And just from the accounts that I've read, there were wooden markers sometimes. They were sort of, you know, brittle marble markers. There were things that were destroyed by the fire through the fire's, you know, force.
Right.
And so the grounds were kind of a mess, and especially the Catholic cemetery, which it hit first coming north.
Although you also hear, and maybe this is not true, that the park acted as a windbreak and that it helped to keep the fire from spreading even further to the north. So, you know, it sort of played another role too, I guess.
But what I'm thinking is that the way that the cemetery grounds appeared after the fire, it expedited all of this process because it was ravaged. And, like, what better reason to clean up the way that the cemetery looks now than to really push forward this idea for a park?
Well, and it's interesting that now I'm coughing. It's interesting that you don't find more references,
right,
in the early history of the Lincoln Park Commissioners to, we really need to get,
right,
rid of the cemetery.
Right.
You know, the park improvements are continuing on.
That's why I think that it wasn't that strong of a movement at that point, because there's no
record. But you start seeing plans quite early, beautiful plans.
Yeah.
There was one plan that where the North Pond was supposed to take the entire north side from Fullerton to Diversey was all meant to be the North Pond. So clearly they have their designers working on, we're going to transform,
mm-hmm,
this,
mm-hmm,
but they were never set up with as much taxing power, you know, as the other two park commissions. When the Lincoln Park Commission was formed, they were consulting with the other two groups, the group on the south and the group on the west, and those two groups knew that they had to go to popular vote to be set up with a lot of autonomy so that they could issue bonds and really do massive improvements. And the group that was forming the Lincoln Park Commission was very nervous because they were afraid that if they went for the ratification of their referendum to the public, that it would be voted down. And so they essentially kind of rewrote their bill and they weakened it so that they wouldn't have to go to the public for approval. And so therefore they never had as much autonomy or as much funding as the other two park commissions. So that theme of moving slowly in terms of improvements is something that continues through the history. And of course, all of the separate park commissions were consolidated into the Chicago Park District in the 1930s. And at that point, there was the WPA and there was a lot of federal funding. And so there were a lot of improvements and even the landfill, huge landfill project that was completed at that point. But before then, I think the Lincoln Park Commissioners always struggled with a lot of ambitious ideas that were difficult to carry out. And so things took a lot of time.
And because of what you're explaining about how they didn't have as much money as the other parks, or
right.
as much money in the context of, again, back to what I was interested in, to do these exhumations. And
right.
they were left with the responsibility to pay for the removal of these bodies, but they still needed to be approached by the families who were then, you know.
And there's not a lot of records on
right.
this, you know, which
right.
is when you first contacted me, I wasn't sure how much you would find, because that always surprised me that you didn't have, you know, really specific reports about this year we did this much, and this year, you know.
But there are those wonderful scraps of paper that I found in one of your folders
right.
that actually have a hole in the middle of them because they were just put on a spindle. Like, here's the order to Joseph
and
Ernst.
And I had never really even looked at those materials, so I was thrilled that
they were
made
useful.
Sense.
Yeah. And so there they were. Here's the order. Remove these bodies from this lot.
Right.
And
but when
and
you look at the annual reports and they say, what did we accomplish
yeah, yeah.
this year? They'll say how much black earth they used.
Right,
but they don't
right.
really say, you know, well, we finally got rid of it. You know?
I love when they say, we bought two squirrels.
right, exactly.
And I thought, is that how the squirrels arrived here in Chicago? And I found they bought 50 sparrows. I'm like, why are they buying sparrows? Is that how that they populated?
Well, I mean, the other thing that's so funny is that the beginnings of the Lincoln Park Zoo were with two pairs of mute swans.
Right.
I don't know if you came across right, that.
Yes.
And
uh-huh.
they say, you know, the Lincoln Park Commission for years said we're the oldest zoo in the country because we had those two pairs of swans.
Yeah, I had this conversation with Dr. Fisher, and he tried to clear it up. I don't think the way he cleared it up is to say that there was a contest between Central Park, Philadelphia, and Lincoln Park,
right.
as who was the oldest zoo. And Central Park, he claimed wasn't a zoo just because they had ponds with
it's we try to use that excuse.
Right. But he's discredited Central Park because they only just had, you know, swans in their ponds. In Philadelphia, he said, because there was like a summit between him and when they were trying to decide who was the oldest zoo.
Uh-huh.
And Philadelphia said that on their letterhead, they said they were the oldest zoo. And so he said, well, on our marketing materials, we say that we're the something oldest zoo. And so they agreed to keep
it
that
it was
word.
The first free zoo. But I think that they're calling those swans the initial
right.
beginnings of the zoo.
Right.
So,
right. But
yes.
so, that was an interesting
it's
conversation.
It's kind of amusing.
It is. But that's the same time that that Union Park also had animals.
Right.
And that was like for entertainment or for amusement. I'm not sure exactly. That I came across in one of your Lincoln Park commissioner's minutes that somebody tried to donate an alligator to one of the parks, and
well,
I don't even know if it was Lincoln Park. And
right. I think there was also an intent to have a small zoo in Garfield Park, and I don't know. I think somebody wanted to donate some, I can't remember if it was deer or something, or cattle. They did have a plan to have cattle in that park. So, yeah, that was sort of a typical sort of 19th century kind of idea that you would have mm-hmm. animals in a park. And of course, it really becomes an important theme throughout the whole history of Lincoln Park. And
right.
as you begin to study the park, a lot of things are moving around to make way for the expansion of the zoo. Whereas, you know, other than Indian Boundary Park, which still has a little small zoo, all the other little zoos in Chicago, of course, don't remain anymore.
Right.
So,
right.
So it is, you know, it does become an interesting theme throughout the whole history of Lincoln Park, but I'm not sure that I buy the whole swan argument.
That, yeah. Well, is there anything that you'd like to add to make sure that I report this properly? Because I know you've been correcting my history from time to time clarify the...
You've been doing an amazing job. No, I don't think so. I think I've pretty much covered the fact that it was kind of a tapestry of landscape designs, and there were a series of other important designers that are certainly worth understanding, but they don't deal with the cemetery issue.
Right.
Alfred Caldwell in the 1930s, Ocean Cole Simons did work from in the early part of the 20th century, a lot of improvements to Lincoln Park, and so it really is a very fascinating place in terms of having all of these different sort of beautiful areas that all kind of weave along the edge of the lake, and then of course, I think probably almost 1,000 acres of Lincoln Park being built on landfill, and I think that's just absolutely fascinating.
It is.
So,
it
but
is.
I think you've done a great job of better explaining the starting point. It's certainly something that many of us always wondered about, the whole history of the cemetery and how it began and how it finally
and
got out of the park.
How it ended.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for meeting with me today. This has been a real pleasure for me to see you again.
Oh, thank you.